Greetings, listeners. Welcome to the Cold Fusion Now podcast, where we bring you the latest developments in the science, engineering, and business of Cold Fusion Lenner. I'm your host, Ruby Carrot. Today, I'm speaking with Mats Lewins. Mats is a journalist specializing in technology and author of An Impossible Invention, the true story of an energy source that could change the world. He has a Master's of Science degree in Engineering Physics from the Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm. He spent 15 years working as a technology reporter for the magazine Ny Teknik. He also attended the Innovation Journalism Program at Stanford University in California, during which time he reported for CBS CNET News in San Francisco. Mats Lewins was one of the few journalists chronicling Andrea Rossi's early public demonstrations of the energy catalyzer, a nickel metal and light hydrogen Lenner steam producing device. And then he authored the book An Impossible Invention about the experience. Thank you for being with us, Mats Lewins.
Thank you, Ruby. I'm glad to be here.
Mats, let's start with the New Energy World Symposium. This was a conference that you were organizing and had scheduled for this June before canceling. Talk about the mission of the symposium, and then why was it canceled?
Oh, yeah. So I originally scheduled this symposium already 2 years ago to be held in 2016. And the main purpose is that although there is a long tradition of scientific research in low energy nuclear reactions, and there is an interest in this kind of niche group, a narrow group. I don't know how many people it might be in the world following this thing, but originally not more than maybe a few thousand people. Today, maybe 10,000 people. I don't know, but still very few people. So I feel that it's beyond doubt that scientifically we know that low-energy nuclear reactions are valid and are for real, although because we got so many good experiments being published in peer-reviewed journals that there's absolutely, from my point of view, no doubt about the phenomenon in itself. And yet it's still, as you know, very stigmatized, and very few people, even in the scientific community, considers it to be valid. So, what I wanted to do, when I see that this, in my eyes at least, I believe that it's getting closer to really having commercial products from this technology, from this scientific phenomenon. And when that happens, this will change so much that people will need to start preparing, because it will be a shift that is maybe even more important than the digital shift in the world, or at least together with digitalization, energy, distributed energy at low cost all over the world would be a huge shift. We'll talk about that later. But my main purpose of the symposium was to start talking about this to a wider audience, not those people who have followed this from a scientific point of view, but a wider audience, and start understanding the consequences, not from a scientific point of view, but for society, for finance, for industry, and because the change will be huge. So starting that discussion, that was the main purpose with the symposium, turning to a wide audience.
And who was scheduled to be there?
You mean attendees?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know that I interviewed the director of lookingforheat.com, Alan Smith, and he was so excited to be demonstrating a live glow discharge experiment.
That's right. Yeah, he was one of the slated speakers. You can find the list on New Energy, if you search for New Energy World Symposium. You will find the list of speakers still being online. And those are people who have been following this development, but they have some kind of other expertise as well. A few of them are actually economists, and there are people with other special competence. connected to low-energy nuclear reactors, but with a kind of a wider understanding of how this will influence other areas in society or industries not only the science in itself. Mm-hmm. So my main purpose when I was looking for speakers on the list that I found, I was really happy with the speakers I have on the list, was trying to find people who could this into perspective, into a context of society or industry or finance. Those people at the list are really good at that.
Yeah. Well, and then why was it canceled?
So the first time I canceled it was because of the discussions following the lawsuit after the 1 year, 1 megawatt test that Rossi ran in Florida. And it was impossible to go ahead since the result was disputed and since the lawsuit was going on. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I had to cancel the event. By the way, I also had as a condition for the symposium at that time that the symposium would only be held if we could have a positive result published from that test. And the result was withheld, so we never got, until recently, until the lawsuit was settled, we didn't see the result of the test. And this time, what I've been seeing is that several people, including Andrea Rossi himself, told me, if there is a claim of a commercial product from Rossi, and also progress apparently from companies such as Brilliant Light Power or Brilliant Energy, claiming to be getting closer to commercial products, why don't you wait until there is actually a commercial product? Because that would make this conference so much more tangible, more easy to explain to the wide audience that you want to target. Mm-hmm. And I talked to several people about this, and even Rossi himself told me, listen, Mats, why don't you wait until I present my product? I'm going to present it this year. So, I mean, it's going to be so much easier for you to have to organize a conference once there is a product. Now, you can believe that or not, but the talking with several people and considering the possibility that there is actually a commercial product getting closer, I thought that was the right thing to do, to wait until there is a commercial product and starting from there.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it does.
Well, Mats, you write about Andrea Rossi's emergence in new energy in your book, An Impossible Invention, and you portray an eccentric inventor and an artist on the brink of a major achievement in clean power production. And you got to know him fairly well over a period of years. We have posted an interview with Abdul Rahman Lomax of coldfusioncommunity.net, who documented the Andrea Rossi industrial heat lawsuits and attended the trial. He described a situation where Andrea Rossi did not allow the unit that industrial heat owned to be examined while it was selling power to an apparent shell company residing in an empty room next door. Industrial Heat, the investors in this project, bought a technology that they couldn't get going. What do you have to say about this sad affair?
Well, there is so much to say. First of all, I'll try to make you understand the big picture here. Over the years, I've understood how controversial this technology is, and both in industry and in plasma fusion communities, in very different economical communities. It's so controversial because it's so disruptive. So there is so many self-interest in this. And over time, I've understood that there is tons of biased information going around. There are lots of people who never met Rossi, and they get their information from people who might have correct information, might have biased information or whatever. Ab, for example, have assisted to this trial, and he probably have seen Rossi in court. But I suppose he never learned to know him as I've done for over the years. And I don't know where he got his information from. The description that he gives, to me, it's a series of assumptions, of which several of them clearly aren't true, in my opinion. Regarding the 1 megawatt test, I think that there is a valid report, which is very credible. And the room where this technology using the heat from the 1 megawatt reactor was, from my assessment, it was not empty, but it was filled with actual some kind of very innovative technology that Rossi has only been touching upon, talking with me. And what he had told me seems very coherent and credible. So, from a general point of view, the things we've learned from accounts like from persons such as Abd are, to me, there are lots of assumptions. And I don't even read all the accounts or comments or opinions that I see around, because I've over time also seen that there are so many people apparently having possibility to dedicate full time to writing stuff about this with information that I don't even know where they get the information from. So even if I could dedicate full time to this, I wouldn't have time to read it anyway. And as I'm actually not only dedicating my time to this story, but also doing other things, I really couldn't follow all those comments. And what I've learned also, having studied a few of them, is that it's counterproductive trying to understand them, because once you debunk one or two of them, you understand that many of them might be debunked as well. So it's just a waste of time trying to follow it. I think that the 1 megawatt test was a success. I think that the report was credible. And what I've seen from an engineering point of view, the facts that I've been presented, as I'm got a Master of Science in Physical Engineering, I understand quite a lot of it. To me, it's fairly convincing. It's not 100% as usual as in this story, but the main thing that I would like to come back to, and maybe we could talk about it later, is that you have to understand that Ross is not a scientist. He's an entrepreneur, and he's got one basic idea about introducing this technology to the world, is that you will never be able to make a convincing test that will be accepted by people, because there are so many interests going against it that you will always find some possible flaw in the test. So the only way to convince people of this is introducing a product to the market. And the second thing that he's convinced about is that the only way to introduce a product on the market is doing it privately, not open source, which might be, you know, the modern way of introducing technology in the world. Many people believe in open source and open science. Today, it's a new way of working. But Ross is kind of old school in that sense. And if you understand that these are his two assumptions, you also start to understand the motives for his actions, because that all makes sense when you start from that point of view.
I should say I reached out to Andrea Rossi. I wanted to interview him and get his response. He declined to be interviewed and said he would not talk until he had a technology available. Tell us about your experience reporting on Andrea Rossi in the early days. Talk about seeing his work evaluated by Sergio Ficardi, a longtime nickel and light hydrogen researcher who essentially signed off on Rossi's work.
Yeah, that's a very good question too, because when I first started looking at it, I was fairly skeptic myself. Having heard about cold fusion, you know, following it as technology and science journalist, I knew that there were great doubts, but I never got very deep into it, so I never saw the published articles and etc. But I was fairly skeptic, and also hearing about the kind of person that Rossi was supposed to be, I was also having some skepticism about him as a person. But what happened is that I got to know him. One key thing is, in all these stories, I happen to speak Italian because my wife is Italian. So we started to get acquainted speaking his mother tongue, which obviously is different when you learn to get to know a person. And he found me to be credible as a journalist, and opened himself sufficiently much for me to feel that I got sincere answers from him. But I was going ahead slowly, But the thing is that during all those months and years, actually, that I followed him, I got to know people around him. I got to understand how he behaved with these people and with his own technology demonstrations or experiments or his way of working as an engineer, which he's not really an engineer, he's rather an innovator. He's very Edisonian in his way of working. And the picture I got was this extremely particular, extremely, focused person. I think the story that I have in my book of him beating the Italian record of running nonstop for 24 hours on a running court in Italy, that tells me a lot about his person. He's completely focused and unlimited going ahead on his own track. That's the first part of it. The second part is there's so many people telling stories about how they see that he's got some kind of genius, which is very particular. Some of them, one of them described it as, you know, when I try to understand this part of physics or something in that way, I had to go from A to B to C to D, and it took me days. And when I talk to Rossi and I say A, he's already at D, intuitively. So he's got some kind of intuitive capacity which is beyond normal, which is also important in this story. And I started to understand that maybe it takes this kind of person to go past all the obstacles that you have in low-energy nuclear reactions when you have a phenomenon which is obviously there, but you don't know exactly how to start it from time to time. And you don't know how to regulate it, and it's so evasive. It comes and it goes. And researchers, you know, the small community of research in low energy nuclear reactions have been working on this for decades, and they're still maybe more or less at the same point. And at that point, I think you need a person with a different attitude. Now, and then adding to this, a person like Sergio Foccardi, who I met. And I met him several times. I actually visited his home and had lunch with him and his wife. And we talked about him. We talked about Piantelli. We talked about the people around him doing these experiments. And there is, I can tell you that Foccardi had no doubts about the technology by Rossi was working. He had no doubts about that. What he had doubts about was how it could be explained. He wanted to know more. He was so curious, he wanted to know more, but he clearly was convinced that it was actually working. And Foccardi had, a great experience as a scientist, so it's not anyone saying this. And furthermore, he had also great experience from the low-energy nuclear field.
Yeah. Mats, what do you think about trying to develop a technology without knowing the theory?
It is very difficult, and I think it takes a person like Rossi. Rossi has described this to me several times, how you have to go. It's like, as he put it once, it's like going across Amazonas without a compass, without a map, only trying to follow in one direction, which he didn't say the sun, but basically, you know, making the map while you're going in a jungle. And again, what you see Ross is doing is that he's, without getting tired, putting so much effort in doing experiment after experiment after experiment, trial and error, having this intuitive idea where he wants to reach. Now, I don't know if you know about the theory about lateral thinking. Well, it's a whole set of ideas on how you can be creative. But one part of lateral thinking is that you have to cross areas, domains, which you actually consider to be invalid. You know that this is not possible. This is not true. Here, I'm at a point, I don't believe in this because I know it's wrong. But crossing that area, eventually you arrive at another area where you see results. And then you can see the way back, which doesn't cross the wrong area, but it actually shows you the way that it should have gone in the first place. So it's a kind of creative model. And only persons who are really open-minded to what is considered to be wrong or what is considered to be not be valid only those persons eventually find the right way to such difficult objectives and goals as a working low energy nuclear reaction and technology.
Well, Mats Lewins, I want to ask you if you think Andrea Rossi has a viable technology in development right now, right after this message. Join me at the 21st International Conference on Condensed Matter Nuclear Science, ICCF 21, being held in the Laurie Student Center at Colorado State University in Fort Collins, Colorado, U.S. The conference runs this summer, June 3rd through 8th, 2018. Registration is now open at iccf21.com. And we're back with journalist and writer Mats Lewins, author of An Impossible Invention, the true story of an energy source that could change the world, about the work of Andrea Rossi, inventor of the energy catalyzer, or ECAT. Mats, I have to ask you flat out, do you believe that Andrea Rossi can deliver a technology with his Quark X?
Well, Ruby, before I get you the short answer, I just got to tell you that throughout this story, I always had a door open to the possibility that I'm all wrong, that Rossi is mistaken, or that he's even a fraud or something. You know, for professional reasons, as a journalist, I always have that opportunity, that possibility open. And I'm just waiting for any signal or any proof or any information that could strengthen that view. But so far, nothing has been able to keep that door or open that door more. Nothing has been able to convince me about that track. And apart from that door always being open, yes, I think he has. I think at this point that he has a viable technology. That's my impression. That's my assessment at this moment. And to be honest, he's been saying a lot of things that, well, I should do this within a year or that within a year or, you know, many times over the years. But I never heard him so convinced about actually having a commercial product very close and hoping to be able to present it within this year. I never heard him being so convinced before. And he's got no reason. I mean, he's got really no reason to trying to convince me about that. And again, he has got no reason to tell me that, why don't you wait with your symposium because I'm going to present your product this year. He's got nothing to gain about that. So, and what I've seen, I don't consider the measurements that we made in Stockholm on November 24th convincing and conclusive. Because there were good indications, but there were too many unknowns in that measurement. What I'm thinking is that, you know, going from a prototype to a commercial product, even though it's the first version and industrial applications and everything, in 1 year is a very short time frame. Now, it's not 1 year. Ross has been working with this for decades. But it's kind of 1 year from a very rough prototype to a commercial product, which is still a very short time frame. So the only way I could imagine that this is actually possible is that Rossi really has found the key component, the key process for actually starting this phenomenon immediately and controlling it. And once you find the key element or the key process for doing that, the key method, I think that the technology in itself physically is fairly simple. The device that he will produce will consist of few components. It will not even be very difficult to manufacture. Maybe there are some microscopical precision-made parts that might be difficult to produce, but today that's not an issue. With everything that we produce and manufacturing in the world with very advanced technology. So having that fairly simple device with few components and knowing exactly how it should be designed for working, being able to work, I think it's actually possible. It's like, you know, an advanced innovator going with a device to some very high level producer of technological stuff in China or in the US and saying that I want this product within 6 months and they will be able to do that. That's not unusual today. It's possible if it's a fairly simple product. And I think the only reason for believing that Rossi actually can be able to pull this off in 1 year is that he has found the key for how to start the reaction and control the reaction.
Mats, let me run this by you, because I actually had this idea of Brayun Energy, who has been working on a technology as well. They were able to start the reaction, stop the reaction at will. Robert Gaddis is the intellectual behind that operation there. But they've had trouble scaling it up. And I've always felt that Andrea Rossi was able to get big heat, but he was not able to control the reaction. And that includes starting it, stopping it, and when he had it going, controlling the amount of heat that he could develop. What do you think about that idea?
Yeah, I think your description is right. And what I believe is that he might have found this way of doing that. So he, apart from starting and controlling, he also has a way of producing a lot of energy, or releasing a lot of energy, so a high COP, coefficient of performance. What do we see Brilliant Energy doing right now? The latest document that I saw from them didn't contain very much details, but it made me immediately think about the famous Lugano experiment with the so-called hot cat, the second version of the ECAT technology from Andrea. That the experiment that was made in 2014, I think, in Lugano by these Swedish professors, an Italian, because the design was similar, the temperatures were not exactly the same, but the COP level was similar. So that was just my association, you know, my idea that the maybe Brilliant Energy has been able to find a very similar technology, and at that point they have probably been able to, if not replicating, anyway doing a similar experiment compared to the Lugano experiment. And in that case, you could say that Ross is 4 years ahead, because that was in 2014.
Well, Mats Lewins, you are currently working on projects with the Stockholm School of Economics on the internet and its effects on innovation in the Swedish economy, and also the Swedish Energy Research Center, Energiforks, on digitalization in the energy industry. Can you talk about the new energy industry as a whole? What do you see now in the landscape that's exciting? And also forecast for us a bit. When will we have breakthrough energy technology, and how's it going to change how we live?
Oh, yeah. So the main focus in my work for the last years has been looking at specifically how technology shapes the world, and specifically digitalization, which is the most transformative technology field since decades, I would say, and what we have ahead with increasing capacity in artificial intelligence and in cognitive automation, in Internet of Things, and even blockchain. All those technologies, which are kind of different parts of digital technologies, are those that I focus on. Not so much the technologies itself themselves, but the consequences, implications for society, businesses, and individuals. And the change that we have ahead, that's my main point of view, is that the change that we have ahead with digitalization is much larger than many people actually imagine. I'm working as a speaker and a moderator on these themes, trying to start debate and make people understand, because we need to prepare to be able to shape these technologies in a way that's good for society and good for humans. That's kind of the starting point. And then, for example, I'm involved with this project about digitalization of the energy sector in Sweden. And the funny thing is that I always have this story about low energy nuclear reactions in my back head, but I rarely talk about it because it's still so controversial. You know, even with people knowing me, I'm very careful about it. I'm just waiting because the thing I'm thinking about, you know, is that these people, everyone talks about digitalization. And the people who are most involved, they understand how big the change will be with digitalization and artificial intelligence. And yet they don't have a clue what will happen when you connect that with distributed energy. Because what they see, with innovation in the energy field is renewables like sun and solar and wind power. And then you got Elon Musk working with this, with storage, new battery technologies. But you always have the hurdle that you need lots of storage with these energy technologies. And if you don't have storage, you need to continue using fossils. So it's really a hurdle, a big difficulty, even though the price of solar is decreasing exponentially. But that's not enough because you always have that problem with storage. And then you got hot fusion. And there are news coming up from time to time about that. Maybe hot fusion is not that far away that we thought. Maybe we could actually have it viable in like 5 or 10 years. Oh, yeah, but hot fusion is still high. You got tons of high energy radiation. So you got those centralized power plants that you need to have. You can't really have them distributed. What will happen with no energy nuclear reactions, if that it will be working, is a complete shift far away from all that people imagine from energy innovation, because you're going to have distributed energy. So you're going to have energy available for people locally, and you can actually start cutting the cord to the energy grid, which is, when you think about, I'm actually involved, one of the projects I'm involved in is looking ahead at the future for the national state in a digital world. Because it's very much put into question today. Will the national state actually continue to be relevant? It offers a lot of things, specifically here in Scandinavia, where we've got a very strong welfare state. But it's getting questioned because a lot of things can be offered in other ways through the digital platforms. But one thing that the national state still organizes is the energy grid. And very few people understand how we could disconnect and have a more distributed society, more flexible society, when we need to be, we need to always trust our energy grid, and some big operators or a state will need to guarantee that energy grid. So what they don't see is what would happen if you, together with digitalization, would have a disconnected, a disruptive and distributed energy source like low-energy nuclear reactions. And that would change everything. That would actually put the future of the national state in question too. So it will be a very big shift. And people don't see this. They only see the energy innovation, which is kind of conventional. And the mainstream renewables like solar and wind. And they don't have a clue what will happen. And the shift, if it happens, will be huge.
Well, Mats Lewins, where can people go to learn more about your work?
Well, the first place to go is my website, which is matslewin.se, S-E for Sweden. So matslewin.se. If you Google Mats Lewin, you're going to find it. So it's matslewan.se. From there, you can see links to my YouTube channel or to the research work I'm doing or some events that I will be holding as a speaker or, you know, as a moderator. So, but the starting point is there if they want to learn more. And then from time to time, obviously, when there is anything new in the story about Rossi and low-energy nuclear reactions, I also publish blog posts on the website of the book that I published. So the website is animpossibilitydimension.com.
Well, Mats Lewins, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Ruby. It was a pleasure.
We've been speaking with Mats Lewins, technology journalist, speaker, and author of An Impossible Invention, the true story of an energy source that could change the world. Follow up with Mats Lewin on his website, matslewin.se. That's our show for today. Find more episodes of the Cold Fusion Now podcast on our website at coldfusionnow.org and subscribe on iTunes. Go to our page at patreon.com/coldfusionnow and make a pledge to join our effort. You can also donate direct through PayPal on our website at coldfusionnow.org. I want to give a special thanks with steam to our newest members. Cold Fusion Now will be attending and gathering media at the ICCF 21 conference thanks to your generosity. Until next time, I'm Ruby Carrot.